South Korea, with other countries, demonstrate that even when you get down to very low incidence, you still have to have a very strong public health surveillance system.
Coronavirus cases rise around the world. It's Friday, June 26th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, all at VOA Asia. Also ahead, new details on old U.S.-China tensions, tough times for Myanmar businesses, the virus changes buying habits and pollution. A Thai Japanese ballerina finds new steps in New York. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Spikes in new coronavirus cases in countries that appear to have largely contained it are leading to new concerns amid a debate over the easing of lockdowns. Scientists are looking at whether the virus could have been imported by travelers or whether it's being spread by asymptomatic people. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
The head of the Center for Disease Control in China claims there may have been asymptomatic cases well before the first instances of the new outbreak, also traced to a whole food market, were recently discovered. The 25 new cases China says were reported last Friday in Beijing were among 32 nationwide, four of them in Chinese citizens who had returned from overseas, according to official reports. There is a discussion by Chinese doctors over whether the DNA of COVID-19 in the Beijing outbreak is of a European strain.
They do know that the genetic characteristics of the organism in Beijing this time are different from Beijing a few months ago, which is to do with the organism having mutated.
Chinese officials say containment measures have slowed the momentum of the outbreak, which the government has said infected more than 200 people since earlier in June. In Europe, Germany has also seen a spike in cases after more than 1,500 people at a meatpacking plant had tested positive for the new coronavirus. New lockdown restrictions are being imposed until the end of June as German Red Cross workers in hazmat suits went door to door in Gütersloh on Tuesday to undertake mass testing.
Intensive testing will give us a better picture of the situation.
The news comes as officials in New Zealand reported disappointing news the country was no longer free of the new coronavirus after two women who flew from London to see a dying parent had tested positive. Dr. Mike Ryan heads the World Health Organization's Emergencies Program.
It is a challenge for all countries, and I think South Korea with other countries demonstrate that even when you get down to very low incidence, you still have to have a very strong public health surveillance system, and you still have to have a very capable public health infrastructure.
Global infections surpassed 9 million this week as Brazil and India grappled with an outbreak in cases, and other hard-hit countries reported new surges, including in some parts of the United States. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Australia's military is being called in to help the state of Victoria cope with a sharp rise in coronavirus cases. Authorities have reported a spike in COVID-19 infections in the past week and have urged residents not to leave several disease hotspots in Melbourne. Lockdown restrictions that have been eased in recent weeks could be reimposed. Australia has recorded more than 7,500 confirmed coronavirus cases. 104 people have died. We hear more from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
Victoria recorded 33 new coronavirus infections Thursday, the ninth consecutive day of double-digit growth in case numbers. Sending in the military is a significant move. 1,000 Australian troops will boost security at quarantine facilities for travellers returning from overseas. They'll also help with testing as the state struggles with a surge in COVID-19 cases. Complacency and a flouting of distancing and hygiene protocols have been blamed. Victoria's Chief Medical Officer is Brett Sutton.
The primary lever that we have now is a test and trace mechanism, broadening the testing availability and the messaging and reach everyone about the need to test if they're symptomatic is our key driver to get numbers down.
The virus is spreading, especially in Melbourne, the state's largest city and the second largest city in Australia, and hotspots could again be forced into lockdown. Victoria Premier Daniel Andrews describes the pandemic as a public health bushfire, a reference to the deadly summer blazes that tore across much of southeastern Australia. Andrews says there will be a testing blitz in 10 suburbs and more than 100,000 tests are planned in the next 10 days.
People are going to be knocking on your door and they're going to be asking you to get tested. Please say yes. Please go and get tested. That is the most important thing that you in those suburbs can do to help us contain this virus.
State government health workers will be using a new type saliva swab rather than nasal pads to screen for the disease. Authorities have said previously that large family gatherings permitted following the easing of lockdown restrictions in Victoria have been the source of the new infections. Officials in New South Wales, the nation's most populous state, remain concerned about active community transmission of the virus. Health Minister Brad Hazzard said it was not a time for residents to be complacent. There is some good news, though. The state of Queensland has now gone 8 days without any new COVID-19 cases. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Japan to abandon U.S. missile defense system. Hun Sen tempers speculation Sun will be next Cambodian leader. Pakistan probe reveals 30% of pilots have fake licenses. As investors move from China, Vietnam adds EU trade pact to arsenal. Afghan official open to discussing interim government with Taliban. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. A June 17th meeting between the top diplomats from the United States and China was so low-key, no photos were released. Diplomatic sources say China asked for the meeting. It came at a time of heightened tension between the countries over many issues. VOA's Steve Reddish has more.
Kung flu!
U.S. criticism of China does not stop at its handling of the coronavirus outbreak.
The Chinese government's move against Hong Kong is the latest in a series of measures that are diminishing the city's long-standing and very proud status.
And President Trump has threatened to decouple the country's economic relationship as a new trade deal is stalled. A meeting in Hawaii on June 17th between U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and China's top diplomat Yang Jiezhe resolved little. China called the talks constructive. The U.S. said China was not forthcoming and is waiting to see a reduction in what it terms China's aggressive behavior. 2 days after the meeting, Pompeo warned the Copenhagen Democracy Summit about China's intent.
It's pushing disinformation and malicious cyber campaigns to undermine our governments, to drive a wedge between the United States and Europe, and it's saddling developing nations with debt and dependency. We must take off the golden blinders of economic ties and see that the China challenge isn't just at the gates, it's in every capital, it's in every borough, it's in every province. Every investment from a Chinese state-owned enterprise should be viewed with suspicion.
Beijing accuses Pompeo of trying to drive a wedge between China and other nations.
Pompeo once again made groundless accusations against China in his video address, attempting to sow discord between China and other countries. China strongly opposes this. This U.S. politician's China-related remarks go against basic facts. It contributes to nothing but further exposes his deep-seated Cold War mentality and ideological prejudice.
From the South China Sea to the border with India, China's military muscle is making its presence known, a serious challenge for Washington, say analysts.
Because there are places, starting with Taiwan but extending elsewhere, where a increasingly powerful China is going to want to exercise its muscles. And we're going to have to find clever ways to push back, but but hopefully in a way that resembles, you know, judo or wrestling more than boxing or more than, you know, sword fighting. In other words, pushing back, not winding up in violent encounters.
Nations now face a choice, says Pompeo.
I know that there's fear in Europe that the United States wants you to choose between us and China. But it's simply not the case. It's the Chinese Communist Party that's forcing this choice. The choice is between the United States, it's between freedom and tyranny.
Meantime, China and India have reportedly agreed to disengage from further confrontation after a border clash last week left 20 Indian soldiers dead. Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
This news from VOA Asia. South Korea is commemorating the 70th anniversary of the Korean War's outbreak amid the coronavirus pandemic. The anniversary is not an official holiday, but the occasion often is marked with ceremonies, exhibits, and tours to former battlefield sites for visiting foreign veterans. You'll find all the big stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We've reached the end of the week. We're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. As in other countries, the economic fallout in Malaysia from the coronavirus pandemic has hit small businesses such as restaurants especially hard. There are estimates that up to 10% of these businesses have had to shut down. Dave Grunebaum reports from Kuala Lumpur.
Regular customers often think of David Wong as a family friend. Wong opened this bakery cafe 8 years ago, naming it after his mother, Sweeby. The most popular dish is the pineapple tarts made from his mother's recipe.
You know, she taught me the recipe. She taught me how to bake. That is the seed that she has sown in me about baking and cooking.
But Wong is closing his cafe. Located in a commercial district, his business relied on office workers. But with fewer of them working because of COVID-19, Wong said his earnings dropped 70% in April and May, forcing him to shut down.
Yes, yes.
There are similar stories across Malaysia. Local trade groups say 5 to 10% of the small mom-and-pop type restaurants and retail stores have gone under during the past few months. Analysts point to the dramatic drop in walk-in customers.
Yes, some businesses try to adopt a digital solution to it, try to have e-commerce platform and for your e-hailing riders to deliver your products. But that has not been successfully played out in many of these SMEs or these small businesses.
Analyst Lau Zhang Zhou says the Malaysian government stimulus package provides wage subsidies and funding to help businesses defray costs. But it's not always enough.
Businesses are thinking, you know what, maybe I should just close the shop and start anew. Because it could be more costly paying daily bills like wages, electricity bill.
Wong says that describes his situation, plus he could not convince his landlord to lower the rent.
It does really hurt that, you know, just a blink of an eye, I have to leave. I had to make a decision because economically I can't sustain, yet, you know, it hurts.
His customers are sad too.
I've been a regular here for 3.5 years. So it's not just about the food and everything, it's about the relationship with them as well.
Before the crisis,
Amy is yours.
Thank you.
Wong was planning to set up a commercial bakery to make his popular pineapple tarts to sell to retail stores and restaurants. He says he will continue with that plan, but adds he will miss the social interaction he had at his cafe with his customers.
And this is how you
Dave Grunebaum for VOA News, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
Happening now in Asia, football's world governing body FIFA has awarded Australia and New Zealand the 2023 Women's World Cup. The announcement in Zurich comes as New Zealand boasts one of the world's best coronavirus containment strategies. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Fresh air, lower levels of carbon dioxide emissions, and cleaner water. When the coronavirus pandemic hit the United States in mid-March, environmentalists were happy to see positive change. But months of lockdown have also led to a rise in online consumption. And that's accompanied by more waste, like plastic bags, bubble wrap, face masks, and gloves. Daria Digits has the story.
Amara Wichitong carefully examines every inch of the bay near a Thai resort town of Pattaya. Together with her dad, she cleans the water from the plastic trash.
I'm afraid that after COVID, the sea will be filled with trash. Local environmentalists say the plastic trash levels rose by 50% in April, and 80% of that trash are plastic food containers, water bottles, and cups and disposable packages.
When the pandemic hit the U.S. in mid-March, the number of online purchases rose by 240%. Millions of plastic bags, wraps, aerosols, gloves, and face masks were being sent to homes across the country daily. As a result, the amount of plastic trash filled the cities.
Just in March and April of 2020, in the heart of this pandemic, at just one wastewater pumping station, we've seen an increase of 17 tons of wipes compared to March and April of last year when we were not in a pandemic.
Plastic bag use increased dramatically as well. Some states delayed implementation of bans on plastic bags due to the pandemic, and some grocery stores stopped allowing the use of reusable bags to avoid spread of the virus. Some environmentalists say the moves aren't helping.
Of all the materials, COVID-19 lasts longest on plastic. And so it's actually contradictory to what they were even citing.
Recycling companies are also struggling due to the drop in oil prices.
The recycler has costs of collecting waste and processing it, and then it sells that recycled material. And that is being, that price is set according to the price of oil. So when oil goes down, many recyclers can't be competitive.
Environmentalists say every year about 8 million tons of plastic ends up in the ocean. Specialists say plastic production can increase by 40% in the next 10 years already. And since only a fraction of that can be recycled, the scenario looks pretty grim.
Where are we seeing plastics? And I think there were a lot of folks that were alarmed with, once they started looking for smaller pieces, how you could find it in so many places.
According to the Pew Research Center, more than 64% of Americans say protecting the environment should be a congressional priority. But experts worry the pandemic and its economic impact may push environmental and pollution issues off the agenda. For Daria Digits in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
Now on VOA Asia, the coronavirus pandemic has significantly changed America's consumer behavior. People change their buying habits, stock up on groceries and household items, and resort to online shopping. And experts believe these changes will be long-lasting for both consumers and sellers. We hear more from Maxim Moskalkov.
People's consumer behavior is going through a lot of changes. While some head to the stores to stock up on groceries and household items, others prefer to stay in the safety of their homes. Researchers at the Category Partners consulting firm believe that people's consumer behavior has quickly changed since the start of the pandemic.
The first shift happened in early March, and that was sort of what we think of as the recognition awareness phase, where consumers sort of woke up to the fact of, hey, something's going on here. Maybe I ought to stock up on something. When we got into mid-March, that's where we hit what we would kind of characterize as wave two, and that was really panic buying, if you will.
Grocery stores were selling 70-90% more food than they did at this time last year. People were buying in bulk, afraid of potential food shortages. In April, after people calmed down and realized they weren't faced with shortages, the third phase kicked in, the quarantine phase. Some have lost their jobs. Many more switched from deliveries to cooking everything at home. Grocery store lists have become well thought through and planned. Experts believe that after the quarantine measures are lifted, phase 4 will resemble the 2008-2009 economic recession. Purchasing power will go down significantly, which will hit retailers hard. Yet, the pandemic has in a way forced people to try new online shopping experiences. And that trend might continue even after the pandemic.
Only 4% of groceries were purchased online prior to coronavirus. Now that number is over 25% in under a month. So people are taking categories they would only buy in the store and beginning to try buying them online for the first time.
The crisis has changed the shopping list of Americans as well. The sales of disposable gloves grew by 670% since early March. Those of cold medicine by 535%. People are also buying more non-perishable foods like grains and preserves, as well as chips and cookies. The same happened to the sporting equipment, as well as the things most people never had at home.
Like bread makers, for example. Most people didn't own a bread maker, so it's pretty easy for that to increase something like 600% when people decide they want to do that for themselves.
Experts agree that the pandemic will have a long-lasting effect on both buyers and sellers. And when people do go back to normal, the habit to stock up on certain items might still be there. Maxim Moskalko for VOA News, Washington.
Sierra Kiyono, a Thai Japanese ballerina and a former actress in The King and I, Broadway musical, says the COVID-19 outbreak in New York City has forced her to reinvent herself. With shows and live performances canceled, Kiyono is now teaching ballet online and picking up tap dancing to retool herself for future auditions. VOA's Warren Kana Chumchuan tells us more.
Dancing, performing, and modeling in New York City is a dream come true for Sarah Kiyono, a Thai-Japanese ballerina and actress. But Kiyono's budding performance career came to a sudden halt when the coronavirus outbreak forced the city into a lockdown. In March, theaters and other venues closed, putting an entire industry out of work. Before the coronavirus outbreak, I never spent much time at home. Every morning, I would get up early and get ready for auditions and casting. To suddenly wake up one day and realize that I couldn't leave home was very disorienting. All my plans and my schedules were gone. Sarah Kiyono, whose actual name is Soraya Petun Sitishai, came to New York City in 2011. Kiyono performed in The Nutcracker, Little Mermaid, Cinderella, and others. Her breakthrough came in 2018 when she was chosen to play Eliza, the runaway slave, in the Broadway production of The King and I. Now, with performance work on pause and income from gigs dried up, the 31-year-old offers ballet and dance classes online to get by. The students set up the time and I teach twice a day. It's a bit difficult because I can't physically help adjust their body movements. So I try not to focus too much on technique, but just encourage them to move their bodies and make it more like a workout.
Welcome to my channel. Come on in.
Kiyono launched her own YouTube channel to show off her skills and find opportunities to learn new ones.
I recently went to an audition where they want someone that can do many styles of dancing, including tap, which I couldn't do. So now it's a good time to learn tap. I've been taking online tap dance classes that my friends offer. It's free, but we all chip in with donations to help each other.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find our full-length programs at our website, voanews.com. You can also hear our programs streaming each and every day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter. We're also on Instagram. And you can see us on YouTube. We thank you so much for spending time with us today. We also thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team. That's Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Pulpyboon. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day, a great weekend. Be safe, be well.